planetaudio.nz. planetaudio.org.nz.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the regular Friday morning Maitreya program on Planet FM. And this program is, again, recorded under lockdown conditions, so there's not two of us today, there's just one. Today, my program includes a book review, a book by Richard D. Wolfe, who is the Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Massachusetts, and his book is called The Sickness is in the System. Following that, I've got a question from Anand Giridharadas, and he asks, what do we do with the lessons learned from the COVID-19 pandemic? But first, we'll do this book review. Now, this has been reviewed by Sebastian Villamot, who is a Share International co-worker. And Richard D. Wolfe has asked, what does the COVID-19 pandemic reveal about the deficiencies of our economic system? And could this tragedy be the catalyst for a deep systematic change? Now, his book is called The Sickness is the System. Not the sickness is in the system, but the sickness is the system. Subtitled, When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or from Itself. In this collection of short essays, he argues that many of the problems of our time are rooted in the very economic system in which we live, which namely is called capitalism. And this system, which has now become dominant across the globe, has always been plagued by various problems which are inherent in the instability of the system itself. Professor Wolfe reminds us that capitalism regularly crashes, more or less violently, and this is a phenomenon which is euphemized as the business cycle. Such crises happen every 4 to 7 years on average. And in the 21st century alone, the system has been through 3 major downturns, the 2000-2001 dot-com bubble, the 2007-2008 GFC, Great Financial Crisis, and now this one, the COVID crisis. And he says it's interesting to note how all these events are named after the factors that triggered them, but they are never presented as crashes of capitalism itself, even though the very recurrence shows that they are an intrinsic characteristic of the system. And in particular, while it is true that COVID triggered and worsened the present downturn, several economic indicators show that capitalism was due already for a crisis before this pandemic. And were it not for the COVID virus, another trigger would have undoubtedly precipitated a crash. Of course, these recurring crises are not abstract events. They have very tangible and often tragic consequences for the lives of millions of people, particularly those at the bottom of the social scale. Incomes and jobs are lost, personal and professional projects are crushed, and families and social ties are broken, physical and mental illnesses develop. And given the huge human and social cost of this systematic instability, various solutions have been tried over the decades, but all have failed at suppressing the capitalist booms and busts. We've seen the Keynesian type government spending plans, the neoliberal austerity and structural reforms, and active monetary policy, which is basically printing money. After showing that the system is more to blame itself than COVID for our present economic and social crisis, Dr. Wolf exposes how, well, Professor Wolf exposes how capitalism failed at both preparing us for and containing the virus. Throughout history, humanity has repeatedly been exposed to emerging diseases, which have sometimes taken huge death tolls. Specifically, in the last few decades, we've seen new respiratory viruses such as SARS and MERS, and there's another one which they were talking about in New Zealand just recently. Which appears cyclically. Scientists had warned that it was only a matter of time until another respiratory virus, possibly of the coronavirus family, would cause a major pandemic disrupting our social life. And we have been warned. So why was so little, and why were we so little prepared when COVID hit? The reason is again to be found in our socio-economic structures. The logic of capitalism is that firms only produce when they expect a profit. And preparing for the emergence of a new respiratory virus would have meant stockpiling masks and ventilators and preemptively researching vaccines and treatments for the family of the coronaviruses. But such activities are economically too risky for capitalism. One cannot know in advance when and how a pandemic will hit, and therefore private health companies are not willing to take on the task or the risk associated with preparing for such an event. They prefer instead to focus on the alternative and more profitable opportunities. This is a capitalist failure. A solution would be for the government to step in and to buy and stockpile masks and ventilators and to directly finance medical research. So interestingly, Professor Wolf notes that the government already does this in the military sector because it would not otherwise be profitable for private companies to build weapons and various equipment and to research the new technologies, since military conflicts are so unpredictable. If national security is too serious a thing to be left to market forces, then why not has the same been done for health, which is arguably as important? The answer, particularly in the US, is that private health companies do not want the government to expose their failures. They want to continue making profit out of health, and they have successfully used all their political power to demonize any public intervention as socialism. And that's socialism, the word, has got a terrible connotation in America. You mention socialism in public circles and you can see people flinch. Capitalism is therefore crash-prone and inadequate, failing to protect us against health emergencies. But as shown by Professor Wolf, it bears a responsibility for many of our social illnesses, such as inequalities, unemployment, and crises of democracy, racism, and sexism. Inequalities are an inherent part of capitalism, since only a tiny minority of the population, the employers, has the power to make the most of the economic decisions. Those, the employers, will naturally get the largest share of income because they'll make sure it's that way. Even worse, the logic of the system is such that those inequalities will increase over time, generation after generation, when unchecked. And historically, this tendency has only been brought to a halt when people have protested and risen up on a mass scale. Example, during the 1930s when President Roosevelt took hand. This structural inequality, which is bad enough in itself, also has negative consequences on the quality of democracy. People with more economic power are able to influence political decisions directly through donations or indirectly by threatening to engage in an investment embargo or an investment strike when governments do not obey them. Capitalism therefore undermines the democratic principle because it makes us unequal in the political arena. Professor Wolf points out that mass unemployment is another structural characteristic of capitalism. Putting everyone to work would obviously be in the interest of society as a whole. It may even be in the short-term interest of employers, who could make more profit by producing more. But capitalists draw benefit from maintaining a reserve army of the unemployed, and the threat of unemployment is used to discipline employees who are forced to accept low wages and bad working conditions, or they will be fired and quickly replaced with an unemployed candidate who is willing to work for less. The system therefore periodically generates bursts of mass unemployment, which help to sustain the profit rate and the strength of the domination of employers over employees. Following this line of thought, Wolf also describes the processes by which sexism and racism, while finding their origins outside of the economic sphere, and which have come to light in large part lately because of the COVID pandemic, are nevertheless used and fueled by capitalism for its own benefit. Since the system is so blatantly inadequate, how do we move to a better one? Well, there have been various attempts at reform in the past, notably under Roosevelt's presidency in the US, but they have been short-lived. Capitalists have managed to undo these reforms once the pressure from social movements diminished. A more structural and permanent change is needed. And Professor Wolf advocates a simple yet far-reaching idea to achieve this by democratizing workplaces. Capitalism is a radically undemocratic social organization because a tiny minority of shareholders and directors make all major decisions without being accountable. The alternative would be to run firms as worker co-ops, where decisions about what and how to produce, and importantly, what to do with profits, would be taken by all workers using a one-person, one-vote system. This would not only be more consistent with our democratic ideals, but it would also solve the contradiction between employers and employees that is at the core of capitalism and which engenders all the problems previously mentioned. One of the reasons or the lessons of the pandemic is that capitalism is unable to respond adequately to basic health needs because of the profit motive. The same is actually true of all other basic needs: food, housing, education, energy, care for the elderly. All these essential services should therefore be transformed into worker co-ops. Consumers and communities should be involved in economic decision making along with workers, so that the outcome which is in the best interests is attained. The best interests of all is attained. In other non-essential economic sectors, however, capitalist firms could continue to exist. And this is interesting because we did a program recently where in India and Brazil, I think, and Colombia, a number of local groups have taken charge of the democratic process, which ensures that officials worked for the benefit of the society. And I recall that these programs showed that the people who were most affected by the decisions made the decisions that affect them the most. So Professor Wolf is talking about this, yet it's actually been done in India, and I think it was Colombia and Brazil from memory, maybe a couple of other places. In this way, society could observe how both types of firms behave, the capitalist one and the one where people have a more democratic say, and make an informed decision about the desired balance between capitalism and co-op socialism. Wolf gave us in this book a very useful tool for understanding the system in which we currently live, at the same time offering us a vision of an alternative which is both practical and attractive. And he does so in a very clear, direct and accessible style which should appeal to a wide audience. So that's a book review. The sickness is the system, when capitalism fails to save us from pandemics or itself. And you can read more if you like at www.democracyatwork.info/books. And I'll leave you now with The New Time for Men, which is an article by Benjamin Kremsmaster. We might just have to only do part of it, from April 2001. With every day that passes, mankind is being shown the calamities which occur from the misuse of free will. Divine free will is man's greatest treasure, but only when it is used in accordance with the plan of the Logos is it lawful and right. Man has travelled far from that understanding, and so reaps the whirlwind of his wrong thought and action. Thus it is that millions suffer needlessly in the midst of plenty, wanting the means that others take for granted as their birthright. Not for much longer can man support this separation. The law demands a sustaining balance, and finding it not, acts to adjust and reconcile. Moreover, the new energies of synthesis demand expression more and more, and daily ease mankind towards that goal. Men everywhere find the rising tension difficult to bear and flounder in the resulting chaos. From deep within themselves, men sense that the way to the future lies through change, but see not yet the outlines of the path. They await a sign that their needs are known and will be met, but trust not the profusion of signs which everywhere announce the presence of that very succour. They hope and fear at once, and reject the possibility of that for which they yearn, and so has it always been. Meanwhile, sections of mankind press blissfully on, enjoying the easy fortunes which daily astonish their hungry, greedy minds. They are blind to all but their own precarious success. They cannot sense the tension or hear the tolling of the bell. The disease of speculation has them in thrall, and thoughts of dying ancient Rome's excesses come to mind. Watching these different and conflicting attitudes stands hierarchy, seeking to aid in every way it can. Only the free will of men prevents direct intervention. But the law is the law and must ever be obeyed. Nevertheless, much help is extended which mankind never sees. Maitreya is assessing the situation which exists from day to day and is looking to emerge before the stock market collapse, which has been predicted. Steps are being taken to make this possible. This being so, the time is short indeed until his open mission begins. Watch and be alert that you may not miss the early signs. Maitreya will seek to galvanize into action the men and women of goodwill everywhere. Many there are who are but awaiting for his call. Thus will be set in motion a great debate in which the basic needs of men everywhere will be examined and appraised. In this way, men will come to know and test the possibilities that change can guarantee, and so find the courage to begin the needed transformation. Thus will it be, and thus will the great Lord advise and guide and inaugurate in the new time for men. That's from April 2001. Well, thank you very much for listening. So just go well. And